At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everybody, welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty along with Eric Baranchik, and we're here to talk about our film review of the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to say very surprising 16-10 win over the Indianapolis Colts with Malik Willis at quarterback, their backup. Eric, let's dive right in, and how do we not talk about the game plan for this game?
I don't know. You know, it's funny. Here's the funny thing is I was around a bunch of people today, mixed people, and probably half of the people said, oh, I can't believe the play calling was terrible. It was awful. It was such a boring game. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That was one of the most entertaining football games that I've seen in a very long time. And it was really interesting, the dichotomy of the people that were like, oh man, it was great, they were running the ball. I'm like, look, they pound the ball 50 times and you think that's boring? Oh man, I just thought it was incredible. But that's me, you know me, I'm a defensive guy. I like running the football, you know, because you know, when you throw the football, there's only one good thing that, well, now I guess now with pass interference, there's two good things that could happen and a bunch of bad things. But anyways, I thought the game plan with this offense that they needed was really, really good. And I'm going to borderline genius of the way that they used the defense against themselves. You know, Jaden Reed coming off of that big game down in Brazil, a bunch of touches, a bunch of yards. He's dangerous. Obviously, one of the focal points for that offense that you got to stop. And they used him as a decoy. The guy only got the ball four times. Both and all four times they were positive plays. One reception for I think a yard, but the rest of them were positive explosive plays. But the defense was well aware of where he was, and they used him in motion. They used him to run fake bubble screens. They used a fake handoff to him, to it froze that second level of the defense. So the linebackers and the safety. So a lot of times they had three linebackers in and a safety up, especially after they started running the ball a little bit. And you can just see those guys when he goes in motion, they start to slowly leak that direction, and then all of a sudden, boom, comes back the other way, and it sets up the second level defenders for blocks by the offense. And I can't just say O-line because it was a thing of beauty. I mean, when you're watching this, it's like old school wing tee football where you got 10 guys or 8 guys blocking, quarterback watching and directing, and a guy carrying the football. You know, it's really, really good. And then, like, you know, that was 1960s, early 1970s style football, just 4 yards.
I feel like I was watching, this won't resonate with a lot of people, but I felt like I was watching Oklahoma in the 70s, you know? I mean,
yeah. The only thing you didn't bring out was the wishbone.
Fun, you know?
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it, and they did enough passes to kind of when they needed to. So, I you know, heck, that touchdown pass to Malik Willis was perfectly timed. They had to throw the pass there in order to keep the drive going, or they're going to have to kick a field goal. So, I was really, really impressed with the way that they stuck with it. And I guess it's easy when you start pounding the ball and you're having success and the other team is throwing stupid interceptions. It's probably easier to stick with the game plan like that. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was like I said, it was borderline genius because you don't see a lot of what these guys were doing. And I think it's something they can carry on throughout the rest of the season. And that's something that, you know, Matt LaFleur has talked about since he got here was, you know, window dressing or eye candy for the linebackers at second level of defense. Give them something to think about, and then you can skirt outside and run the ball a little bit.
You know what surprised me rewatching the game? A lot of these runs, all these plays, even in the first quarter, you know, when we go over this in our column, some of those plays, they were against eight-man boxes. I mean, not just seven-man boxes, but eight-man boxes. And they're still cranking off, you know, 12-yard runs, even more than that. And then when they're not getting that, they're still getting five on most carries, which is a, you know, that's a really good run play. I just, you know, it was hard to how do you do that against a team who knows you don't want to put the ball in the quarterback's hands? The guy's only been here 3 weeks and knows you're going to run the ball. I just all that misdirection and motion, I mean, it worked wonders.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's, you know what? And here's the part that everybody probably doesn't think about either. It just adds to the volume that the defensive coordinators next week are going to have to prepare for, because you got to go through all of that. And by the end of the season, you know, your defense probably has seen most everything and you're picking out the stuff that scares you the most. And that's the stuff you're going to look at. Because at some point, you just run out of wrinkles, and the wrinkles that come in are smaller and smaller. But in this case, you know, next week, it's going to be, you know, those guys are going to have to spend some time looking at what they're doing. And not only that, prepare for if Love is going to play. So it's going to put some pressure on the opposing defensive coordinators coming forward and for the linebackers. And all you need is that split second of doubt from the linebackers and the safeties, especially at that second level, especially if you got a safety that's playing up at linebacker depth. It's really deadly if that guy takes a false step or is frozen for a second, because that's the difference between a tight end or a slot receiver getting beyond him and making a big play.
What do you think of Jacobs? What do you see there? Comparing him with Aaron Jones.
Well, you know, it's funny because people ask me the same thing a bunch today. What do you see as a difference? He doesn't have the vision that Aaron Jones has. As good of a runner Josh Jacobs was yesterday, he still left some yards on the field. Basically, just that vision that Aaron Jones has, you can say what you want about his speediness and all that kind of stuff and quickness, but it was the vision of being able to see where the backside hole is, or if a guy over pursues just enough where he can put his foot in the ground and plant behind it. I thought there were some yards that were left on the field. Nothing that hurt the Packers, obviously, but there was, you know, some yards left on the field. And I think he's a tough runner, tougher than I thought he would be between the tackles. He's got some wiggle. Certainly he's got some straight line speed. I'm a little concerned what's going to happen in November and December if it's the middle of September and he's putting the ball on the ground right now. So that's going to be something that we're going to have to watch and see how that plays out. And because that was the one thing, you know, for years past that hasn't been an issue in Green Bay with backs putting the balls on the ground and, you know, going into the end zone, putting one on the ground there, that in a different game that can cost it. That could have been a really costly touchdown. And hadn't that quarterback from the Colts throw two really dumb interceptions?
Yeah.
That could have cost him. I mean, that could have been the game right there. So yeah, that's something that we got. That's got to be, you know, something that's going to be interesting to watch as the season progresses.
I thought in the moment that fumble was going to end up coming back to bite him. You know, the one thing with Jacobs is, I mean, I just can't imagine Aaron Jones ever carrying the ball 32 times and coming out of the game healthy. You know, I just can't see it.
No, in an interview after the game, Josh Jacobs says he didn't think he's ever come out of a game feeling as clean as he did. Now, maybe some of that's the endorphins from having the ball that many times, and today's a different story. But that's really says something, too, that, you know, that's a, you know, what that is that the guys were blocking so good that he wasn't taking big hits, and he was getting hits falling down and not having to run behind his pads the entire day.
So is Tucker Kraft tight end one for the rest of the season?
I knew you were going to say that. Dang it. I got to believe so. You know, and part of it is he's just a gritty. He's, you know, Musgrave is that tight end, body beautiful, right? Tall, lean, angular, pretty quick. I thought he looks like he added some mass to his upper body this year. And I was really expecting And maybe, again, it's the second weekend. We don't know what's really going to happen. But Tucker Kraft, man, he's a scrapper on the line of scrimmage. Now, he will miss a block. You know, all tight ends do. Don't get me wrong there. Some of them worse than others. Some of them don't even attempt to block. But he's a scrapper guy in the line of scrimmage. And you know what everybody really likes, and I guess what you got to think about is after he gets the ball, he makes things happen. You know, he doesn't just catch the ball and fall down. And you know, a lot of tight ends, that's what they do. So that's the important part, I think, with him is that once the ball is in his hands, you know, he's a scrapper as well as being a scrapper on the line of scrimmage.
You know, it's funny, during training camp, talked to him a couple times as he was just starting to come back from, you know, because he missed the first couple weeks because of that. He had the surgery in the offseason for the pec, for a torn pec. And he kept bringing up blocking, how important it was to him. And I don't think it was lip service. I mean, I think he was serious about it. I think he wants to be good. He wants to be complete. And those guys, a complete tight end is worth his weight in gold, right?
Right. And one of the things that happened last season, I mean, the beginning first couple games, especially probably into week 5 and 6 last year, we can go back and listen, but I was complaining about the tight ends not being able to block their way out of a wet paper bag. And when those guys started to come around, now it all kind of coalesced around the same time that Aaron Jones came around or came back into the lineup. But those guys make a difference. They make a difference on cutting off the backside. They make a difference at the point of attack. And you're asking them sometimes to block some pretty good players, especially off the edge guys. So, yeah, I mean, having those guys that can do it, it's pretty good. And it really helps your offense and people rally around it.
So what do you think of well, first of all, one final question, because we've talked about all this stuff, but we really haven't said anything about Matt LaFleur. Where do you think he ranks? I don't know. Tough to rank, knowing other, you know, ranking other coaches that we don't see every week. But what do you think of him as a game planner, play caller? It's funny. I just read a story about Troy Aikman over the weekend, and it was a big feature story about some of the trials and tribulations of his life. But one of the questions they asked him was who he'd want to play for if he played in the NFL right now. And he said Belichick and Shanahan, McVay, and LaFleur.
Really?
Yeah.
That is interesting. That is interesting. I don't know why that is. I guess part of me – okay, so I gravitate to, like, the Bill Parcells and the Belichicks and the Dan Campbells. Those are the guys that I naturally gravitate to. LaFleur, and it's got to be different behind closed doors or when he's standing there at the podium. I think he's a younger – you know, like Belichick and certainly Parcells wouldn't be able to do it anymore, be able to relate to the younger crew, you know, the younger players, and probably I wouldn't either. You know, but I think he does a really nice job of communicating, and it certainly seems like his teams play for him. So where he fits in the grand scheme of things, you know, if you're ranking him 1 to 32, I don't know where I'd put them there. I would say sometimes it appears like they get out coached sometimes in years past in the big games. I don't feel that way right now. But he just doesn't, for Eric, he doesn't have that fiery rah-rah, go get him kind of don't mess with me kind of coach. And I don't think that coach really resonates right now in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely not an intimidator. I think he is. he could be wound pretty tight. I mean, even Rodgers would make, allusions to that, especially early, where I think Rodgers kind of thought LaFleur would kind of lose his mind for a few seconds at times because he was wound so tight. But I think he is a really, a really intense guy. But he's not an intimidator but you're right. I mean, are there any coaches like that? Even Campbell, whose team just exudes his personality and his toughness. It doesn't seem like he does it as much through fear as he does through just flat out enthusiasm, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. You know, I guess what I like about Shanahan is his teams by the end of the season are really disciplined, you know, and he does a lot of motion and it's kind of changed. Once he got to the Niners, you know, he really put his stamp on things, and he was kind of the first guy in a long time that the running game became so important, and they pulling multiple guys and running three and four and five blockers to the point of attack, and committing to the run and not just lip servicing it. So he always just seems like so poised, but their teams are disciplined and they do fundamental things and they're physical. I guess that's the one thing about LaFleur's team is I don't think anyone's ever said that their team is super physical. And I guess that seems to be the missing piece, especially defensively. Now, Sunday, that offensive line and that offense was physical. You know, that's probably one of the more physical games I've ever seen them play. And, you know, now if they could do that same thing on defense, I think that would show a lot.
Yeah, let's jump over, switch topics. Malik Willis, you know, I've just been kind of thinking through this afternoon, and he did a lot of impressive things by not trying to do too much amongst others. The one thing I'm still not sure is did he, I don't know that he threw any passes where it wasn't basically the first read. And so I wonder in a game where he's got to throw 22 times how that would go. But overall, what do you think the Packers have there? What's your early impression? I mean, we've only seen one game, and that game plan worked so masterfully. You know, he didn't have to do that much.
Well, I think, first of all, he showed a bunch of poise. I think a lot of guys, if they would have got a ball snapped to them covered in barf, that they probably would have dropped it. And you saw if you really watch the replays, you see him take his right hand off and it actually wiped his hand on the towel before running with it.
I didn't notice that during the play.
During the play,
I did not notice
the end zone shot, and you see him put his hand on, wipe his right hand on the towel, and then take off running. It's hilarious, you know. So you got to give that guy some points for that. I mean, holy cow! But you're right, and I think the game will slow down. It, at least for good quarterbacks, it slows way down. And yes, there were secondary reads primarily. If it wasn't open downfield, you know, there was a play where Christian Watson was in the middle of the field. Now, he took that ball and went 19 yards. The next play, he fumbled it in the end zone. But on that play, had he not given up on that, the protection was really there. It was okay. He got a little happy feet and ran, but Watson was right there. There were times where the check down, you know, what did he only miss two passes, really? He ran out of there a little bit, and they used him as a runner. But there was a time where Musgrave was open as a check down, and he didn't see that, and then I think he took off running. But what do you expect? But, I mean, you want to talk about just sheer talent. The guy can throw the ball. He's got great zip on it. He's a big running or quarterback, and so when he's got the ball in his hands, you know, that's pretty impressive. And he's physical; he can run. So there's a lot there to like. It's whether or not if he can be a quarterback that can be a really good, successful second stringer and get you through games remains to be seen, because the game has got to slow down a little bit. He's got to. And that's really hard, especially for young guys who aren't playing a lot. When that rush, when that pocket starts to come back on you, what are you going to do? Are you going to stand tall and make the throw, or are you going to bail? And yesterday, he bailed. But so that's going to be the big difference in his development. Is he going to be able to stand in there and get to the second and third read?
You know, you pointed out that play, you know, the one where he had Watson over the middle. If he had slid to his left in the pocket, he might have been able to have a nice alley to make the throw there. But he took off on the run. And when I rewatched that, it brought to mind the replay. They showed a replay from behind him, and it brought to mind, you know, I bet one of the problems this guy has run into already in two years plus in the league, he's only 6 feet and a half inch tall. And I wonder, I suspect he couldn't even see. He just can't see on some of those plays. And that was, I wonder if that was one of them. So I wonder if that's always, there's going to be an issue there because he just can't see.
Yeah. And if that is an issue, like if they're in, you know, study today going over the game and he says, you know, I couldn't see him, you know, that's going to be for the coaching staff when they have to play him, that they may have to roll the pocket, get him moving a little bit.
I don't think there's any question on that where they're going to have to, and they did it a couple of times. They're going to have to run boots and waggles and rollouts. Just, you know, not every time he throws, but they got to get him on the edge just so he's, you know, he can see the whole field. Cause, you know, those short guys, they just can't play in the pocket. I mean, look at Russell Wilson's even shorter, but look at the problems. Yeah. The only guy I can think of off the top of my head who was short and could play in the pocket was Drew Brees.
Yeah, for sure. And I think some of that is the way they did their protection too around him. You got to make gaps. You got to make gaps, and you know, so that there's passing windows to throw to. And his timing was really good. And they probably, and Sean Payton was really good at designing offense and designing routes. And you just have to understand that this is what my limitations are. So I got to design routes, and I got to design passing or route combinations that are going to be able to. There's going to be windows, and there's going to be natural windows, whether you're playing a three front or a four front or what have you, you know, there's going to be some windows naturally, and you got to be able to identify them and then make, you know, route combinations that are going to work for them.
So you think Willis is, we've only seen the one game. You think he's a little better than Clifford, a lot better. Do you think next week, if Willis starts, all of a sudden things come back down to earth and, you know, maybe we're not as very impressed and we think of him the same as Clifford. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, cause it's going to be a little tougher, right? He's going to have to really buckle down and be able to stay in the pocket and make some of those throws. But some of the throws he did make were great. The Wicks touchdown, you know, Wicks dropped one on the boundary there. That was a good pass. The play by Dobbs was a good man. That was a professional throw there too. So there's definitely something that, you know, you got to like his arm strength. There's no question about that. It's, you know, it's like he's gonna have to figure it out how they're gonna find a way to make him to be successful in the pocket.
Yeah, you know, and when you're talking backup quarterback and it's a young guy, you know, there is a real advantage, I think, to having a guy who can run like that, because you're just trying to win by hook or crook, right? You're not building a guy to be your quarterback for 10 years. And so, you know, if you go into a game, I bet you anything they told him, if your first read's not there, run. If you're feeling it at all, just take off. You know, if you feel okay about it, just take off.
Yeah, because he's definitely capable of doing that, you know. And that, but now the team saw it. Now they know what they're going to do, what they're going to see. So you're going to see teams try to keep him in the pocket. I'd be willing to bet they're going to exploit A gaps a little bit and try to overload A and B gaps with guys and see what happens. But I think the real thing, the right thing is to get him moving and to get the pocket moved a little bit so that he can be successful in the trees.
Let's flip it over to defensive side of the ball. Anything on defense jump out? They gave up, what, 10 points to a talented but young and at least a couple times prone to really bad mistakes quarterback. I don't know. What'd you see there? What jumped out?
Well, I mean, the quarterback made the defense look pretty good at times, you know, two terrible interceptions that basically took points off the board. But hey, you got to make the plays, right? You got to catch, if the interception's there, you got to catch them. And Eric Wilson and, Xavier was able to do, or McKinley was able to do that. So that's part of it. And I, you know, a couple people asked me today, Pete, you know, man, there wasn't much of a pass rush. And I got to be honest, the last 2 weeks, I don't think you can judge this team's ability to rush the passer off the edge with the quarterbacks that they had to face. You had two quarterbacks that could hurt you, that will hurt you running the ball if you allow them places to run. So if you rush hard from the outside and you miss inside, there's no contain, have fun. You know, Jalen Hurts will do that to you. And you saw it in Brazil last week where, I mean, it was a conscious effort to keep Jalen Hurts in the pocket. And you saw it again yesterday. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in that the Packers pass rush, especially off the edge, is not very good, because I don't believe that that's the case. I think it's you are playing teams that have quarterbacks that will hurt you if you let them. And I think that actually it was fairly decent. And I thought, with the exception of Gary against the run and allowing guys, you know, off the, you know, they're setting the edge the right way, those, the outside guys, the defensive ends have been playing very good. You know, Lucas Van Ness is one of them. You know, Smith, Ngabari a little bit. And then, you know, the exception is Gary, who likes to go cowboy and go barreling inside all the time. So I really think that, you know, we're coming into the part of the season where we're going to be able to see what that front four can do, you know, against teams passing game, and see how they're going to be able to stop them with four. Cause I think it can be done. But I just think, you know, in this circumstance with the quarterbacks that they play, they didn't really have to. A little suspect in the run game again.
Jonathan Taylor, 12 carries, 103 yards, 8.6 yard average.
Not good. And again, it was a little bit of, you know, we heard during the week, Matt LaFleur talked about guys being out of position and not lining up even. Early in the season, you're going to have that. But some of the miscues in the run game, I mean, it's a broken record, you know. You got to take the good with the bad with Quay Walker. You know, you're going to run right at him. It's obvious. You run away from him, good luck. You know, maybe you'll be okay. But he's going to run you down. He's physical. And I think he is – you know, he might be one of the best linebackers in coverage, and even in zone coverage, because that's a big body that you got to throw over the top of. And you got to know where he is. And when they're playing too high shell, you know, he's got that middle low hole, and he does a really nice job. And so you kind of got to take the good with the bad. But there may be some opportunities to move him around a little bit, because you don't want to take someone with that kind of ability off the field. But it's kind of a liability in the run. And 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like this is brand new. I mean, this is last year all over again in that way. Any educated guess on what their thinking is there, why they just automatically put him in there and have been, without hesitation, working him as the middle linebacker instead of playing him at will and putting somebody else in there and maybe moving him over on passing downs into the middle?
I think he's a long – angular, fast person, and he's sideline to sideline type guy. And you certainly a guy that you want matched up on a slot receiver or a tight end going down the middle of the field. I mean, that's who you want. And it's a passing game. It's a passing league. And hopefully, you know, some of the other guy. But the one area that he can improve on to just make his game so much better is to be able to read quicker and press the line when the ball is being run at him. Just limit the space that the running backs can have to juke or to switch directions by pressing the line and taking on the blockers closer to the line of scrimmage. But, I mean, it's been 3 years. May not change, you know. A tiger can't change his stripes.
Yeah, smart money says it won't. I mean, not saying impossible, but I wouldn't bet on it.
No, I don't think so. Can he get better? Yeah, I mean, incrementally better for sure. But some of that is, you know, what's in your rib cage? Do you have the heart for it?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I, you know, just watching Cooper and Hopper, especially Hopper in the preseason. I hate to keep bringing this guy up, but man, I thought he brought an element of striking to guys that this team hasn't had at linebacker for over a decade. And, you know, I wonder if they'll eventually decide to make the change and to move Walker to the will for early downs and only play him in the middle on passing downs and get one of those two rookies, Hopper or Cooper, out there and get their speed and explosiveness on the field every play and in the middle of the field on early downs.
I agree. And I think Cooper is a physically imposing guy. I mean, he definitely a physical player and he can run, you know, so there's that. And Hopper, I think, you know, it's hard to replace a guy who's been on your roster and who's started in the league and you can trust. It's going to take time to replace, you know, even Wilson. It's going to be hard. You know, he picks it off. So now as a D coordinator and linebackers coach, you know, do you add a couple links to that chain? Probably. You know, and the same with McDuffie. That play he made in the first quarter where he went and snuffed that run out in the flat. Pretty good play, you know, and then there's a bunch of other plays. I was like, you know, you really wish he'd be in better position or he'd be able to fight through a block. Those plays eventually
a little bigger, a little faster, you know?
Yeah. And eventually the emotional savings and color runs are dry and you got to give someone another shot, but they got to earn it too. You know, they got to earn it in practice. And both of those guys missed significant time in preseason where they had chances to earn it. And, you know, it's the mental part. You got to line up right. You got to be able to make the right reads. You got to be able to adjust on the fly. You know, there's so much adjustment that happens just based on motion. You know, you get a slot receiver goes in motion and your assignment might be go from being a blitzer to being a cover guy or from being a zone to a man just by how formations change before the snap. So there's a lot of little things there that certainly we aren't privy to because we're not in that room. We see the final product out on the field, but we don't see all that goes into it. Maybe there's things there that we're not catching, but I would have to say you see Cooper getting a few more chances. I think that's going to continue. And I would also think that, you know, at some point Hopper's going to do it. And it's a 17-game season. Someone's going to miss a game.
Oh yeah,
someone's gonna be hobbled or can't finish a game or can play a little bit but not the entire game. You know, so there's gonna be chances. I mean, this season being so long and Thursday night games and all this stuff, there's gonna be opportunities for the young guys for sure.
Yeah,
and one of the things you got to remember too is, and they're doing it. They're getting young guys in there. Get these young guys in early. Season them up a little bit. So by the time December rolls around, it's not brand new.
You know, last week, Barkley had an 11-yard touchdown run. And I think I remember even we talked about the play and you could see the defensive backs all, you know, everybody was pointing around because somebody wasn't lined up right. It turned out it was Cooper who was lined up on the wrong side of, you know, the wrong end of the line. Yeah.
So when you got a gap unaccounted for on a goal line, usually it's bad.
Yeah, that's bad news. So Tennessee this week, two people who are local writers who've covered the team a long time are Tom Silverstein and Rob Domofsky. Talked to people yesterday after the game, or talked to at least one person after the game who told them Love was pretty close to being able to play this week, or at least gave it a real run, and it was real that he might play last week, and that makes it sound like this week would be a possibility. I don't know if I'm buying. I'm still a little skeptical, but, you know, we'll see if he practices at all this week. I think they'd probably want him to do at least some practice work to feel okay about playing him. I guess if he doesn't play, can LaFleur do this again against Tennessee with another young quarterback who's having a really rougher time, Will Levis?
It couldn't have happened at a better time, right?
I know. Who knows what's going on in his brain, right?
Well, the other reason, the other thing that it's going to make this week tough for Mr. Willis is he's going to be spending an awful lot of time with the defensive coordinator telling him about what they do, you know, so he's going to be a busy fellow this week. That much is sure. This might be the week where they, you know, if can you imagine that they, if they sneak out of this 2-0?
Can you imagine
it just the fan sets them up.
How about what, well, besides all the good things to the Packers, imagine what the fan reaction would be in Tennessee if the guy they traded, the number three they traded, comes back and beats their starter.
And you know what? The Packers got enough talent where it could happen. It could happen. I can't remember the phrase. I remember hearing something where the coach was from Tennessee was saying that you know, they would have had a better chance of winning if they just knelt the ball down. Their quarterback play was so bad, rather than try to throw the ball against the Bears. I mean, because I think the Bears scored two touchdowns on D, wasn't it?
One defensive touchdown where Levis threw a backhanded pass, tried to throw it pretty far to the sideline, got picked off, returned, and then a block punt returned for a touchdown.
Yeah, that's tough, you know. But they, you know, you gotta take the good with the bad. I mean, Chicago's not, you know, they got a guy down there, and you know, Carolina decided that they're gonna give their guy a little break.
Yeah. Finding quarterbacks, it's a hard, hard thing.
Yeah, you gotta and listen, I think they did the right thing. The Green Bay Packers did. You know, you get that quarterback, you really like him, and bury him on the bench until he's. I mean, that's the way it used to be years ago, but now it's such a. You get these guys, and you draft them onto these terrible football teams, and then you run them out there and expect them to light it up, and it's really hard. And it's really difficult to have a 22, 23-year-old kid out there in front of 80,000 people and got to make a lot of decisions and a lot of things got to happen. And by the way, he's got to say hut, hut before there's two zeros out in front of him on the clock. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask for a kid, and I think a lot of people forget about that. And, you know, it's not college anymore. You got 11 All-Americans out there versus maybe one or two that you play against on the other team. So there's – It's a big deal, and can they do it? Yeah, I think it's possible. It's going to be another warm day, and you know, maybe they can go down there and run the ball at will again. I would suggest that it would probably be a little bit tougher, but heck, you know, stranger things have happened.
How does the game plan change? Like, can they? Can they throw it? Can they go in planning to throw it 22 times instead of 14? Or,
well, it would be fun, you know. What do the Packers got to lose? They're 1-1. They're not expecting to win. Their starting quarterback's on the shelf, possibly, most likely.
Yeah.
Why not just you got to be loose at this point. You don't have to play all puckered up. You know, you can be loose. Why not walk open the door and, you know, roll in there and throw the ball the first three plays of the game and then start running it.
That's what I would do, is I'd come out with a bootleg and throw it.
Yeah, first thing. And if it's there, tuck it and run, young man. Just go have fun, and let's play loosey-goosey and throw the ball around. Just try not to hit the guys in the blue jerseys.
Yeah, getting that win against the Colts was huge, because now let's say Willis plays two games. You come out of it 1-1. If I'm the Packers, I'm feeling great about that.
Oh, for sure.
Well, look, Eric, I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
Wait a second.
What?
You know what that sound is?
I don't.
Weekly kicker update.
Oh, so you can't deprive the people of that. Yeah.
Not at all.
Oh,
not at all. I'll tell you what. He loves those 50-yarders, and the 30-yarders are real good, but the 40s are still kind of missing him a little bit. But how about this? You know what is really good about it? And I'm spending a minute and a half longer than I ever would in my entire life, but we got to do this every week. Every ball that's kid comes off his foot looks good. You know, there's no fluttering. It looks good. Missed a little bit, but keep running them out there. And I think good things are going to come for him.
Another guy who's going back to the team he was just in training camp with, little different than Malik Willis, but still another guy going back to Tennessee this week. So
can you imagine a 10-7 ball game and the Packers win on a last second field goal by that guy?
You know, in preseason, man, he hit a In the same game, he hit a 58 yarder. It was either 58 or 59 yarder. And then he hit a kick, I think it was in the upper 40s to win the game on the last play of the game in preseason. So he carries himself like a confident guy. You never know what's really going on inside somebody's head, but he carries himself like one.
I like it. I like it.
All right. We're going to have to wrap it there, Eric. Just want to say thanks to everybody for joining us. And I'm glad you think we're worth the time for a download. And remind you that we'll be back again next week, same time and place, talking about the Packers game down at Tennessee. We'll see whether it's Malik Willis or Jordan Love. But until then, want everybody just take care. And we look forward to talking to you. For Eric, I'm Pete. And you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. Take care.
Be good.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.